Moncrief on News Talk.
You're making a mistake.
Oh, shit. It's a cyborg. Don't move. Don't blink.
Just stay calm, friend. They can sense fear.
Not your friend.
Put your hands behind your back and lock your fingers together. Now.
Just so you know, I'm the least of your problems.
That was like 13 seconds before he was ripped in half. That was Alien Earth. New episodes every Wednesday on Disney Plus. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
So afternoon.
Slurping sound effects are back big time.
Yeah, like it's big business for set designers designing like industrial corridors and sparking concrete buildings and so on and so forth. So this is the first Alien TV show that I'm aware of anyway,
I think it is, yeah.
As part of the Alien expanded universe, everything has an expanded universe these days, created in from the film from 78, I think, directed by Ridley Scott, written by Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett. But this is adapted by Noah Hawley. Now, he is a name that maybe isn't familiar to absolutely everybody, but you probably do know the things he's made, particularly Fargo. I mean, who would have thought adapting the Coen brothers, one of like their most beloved films from the 90s, could be successful, let alone repeatedly successful. And he also adapted Legion, which is an X-Men adaptation for the small screen, which is also very successful at what it does. And if you're not a Marvel person, it's like the anti-Marvel X-Men adaptation.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, so he can kind of turn any IP into something very, very interesting. So kind of anything he makes, I'll sit down and give a go. And my thoughts on the whole Alien franchise are like, I mean, I've seen all of the movies and they are a mixed bag. Some of them are really good. Yeah. Some of them are really not. And like the success, I guess, of the franchise rests on two things. First of all is the brilliant creature design of the xenomorph, right? The Geiger weird, creepy weirdness. And then also the fact that the first movie is this little like bottleneck suspended tension moment where there's an alien stalking a spaceship. There's a finite number of characters who are being killed off, some off screen, but like it's all like, what's going on here?
And also what was really striking about the first movie was that there was no obvious star in it.
Right.
And you assumed maybe, well, you know, the captain, the bloke will live, but then he gets killed. Well, spoiler alert. But he gets killed, so you don't really know. And that it really was a really clever device and increased the tension.
Right. Yeah. Fair. So, so absolutely. Right. But here, the kind of spectacle is that instead of it taking place in space, it's taking place on Earth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, it is a futurized version of the Earth. I think the year is 2120 from my vague memory of what's going on, which is roughly 2 years before the events of the Alien movie. But this is not to be considered a direct prequel. It's kind of existing within the universe, but doing its own kind of thing.
I read it wasn't. That it actually contradicts some, because I kind of lost interest when they after the first two or three of them, but like it contradicts some
it
things that supposedly happened in subsequent movies.
I think it is absolutely not in any way aligned with the more recent Prometheus.
Yeah.
One, like I don't remember the more recent Ridley Scott ones with Michael Fassbender, shall we say.
Yeah.
But it does have some of the recurring tropes and Easter egg, shall we say. The main one being that, of course, in this future world, the, you know, I always think that actually the big takeaway of the whole Alien franchise is join a union, right? Like, join a union. Join a union, everyone. Like, join together for collective workers' rights because these corporations are not going to look out for you. So in this future world, five corporations have taken over the solar system. Weyland Yutani is the famous one that people know of the series, but this time around there's a disruptor in the field. It's called Prodigy, and the disruptor behind it is a character named Boy Cavalier. He's played by Samuel Blenken, who was in Alice and Mary, is that what it's called? George and Mary, the recent kind of Elizabethan gay thing with Galatine and Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he has created a new kind of robot, shall we say.
Yeah.
Right? So the robots in this world are divided into three categories. We've got cyborgs, who are humans with robotic parts. There are synthetics, who are completely 100% robotic. And then this new version are the hybrids, which are synthetics that have now got human minds put inside them.
Yeah.
And his great advancement is he can take these terminally ill children and move their consciousness from a terminally ill body into an attractive young woman, who's also very strong and fast and able to control technology. And it's probably an allegory for artificial intelligence running rampant and our inability to control it. Anyway, when a Weyland-Yutani spaceship carrying a number of creatures, some of whom we are familiar with, most of whom we are not, crash lands in the city of New Siam, which is the central area of the Prodigy company, corporation, they decide we'll go in and investigate. Now, all of this is just a very long preamble to have a number of people walking around a spaceship on Earth. Right? Yeah. So the fact that they have relocated it to Earth is kind of yes and no. They've relocated the action. It's still self-contained. It's inside a you know, a skyscraper and a spaceship that has crashed into it. But I hope they go beyond the scope of
I'm assuming they will.
I'm assuming they will as well, right? There are two episodes released so far. There are another six to come, one a week, you know, from Wednesday on. And my understanding is that things will begin to get really weird and even more violent the further we get into it.
Yeah.
Now, it does an excellent job at alien violence. And I mean alien, you know, the IP violence.
Yeah.
That is to say, every so often, what you think in the background is a, you know, a supporting buttress to the building will suddenly shift and then start flaming up and ripping people to shreds. There are characters introduced to immediately be, you know, sliced and diced. There was an interesting kind of leech type creature which we hadn't seen before that had a quite revolting payoff. And then there's a bunch of other alien creatures that we will have to get to know. My understanding is the star of the show is the sheep that we have not seen an awful lot yet.
Yeah, so this spacecraft was loaded down. Where did it come from?
It was
where did
on
it
a,
find all this stuff?
So Weyland, they never quite, you know, I'm never personally satisfied with the kind of log line they give for what Weyland-Yutani is up to. This ship was on a 65-year mission to go around the universe looking for different alien life forms in order to gather them for study to create, I think, the in-universe kind of line is the ultimate weapon.
Yeah.
Because all of these corporations are vaguely at war with each other.
Yeah.
And sort of the emotional heft of the story comes from our lead character. She's Wendy. Marcy is her kind of child name, but then she's reborn as Wendy because there's a lot of Peter Pan never growing up stuff going on as well. She's played by Sydney Chandler, who hasn't appeared in a lot of things. Her father is Kyle Chandler, the actor who's in Friday Night Lights and early edition, other things.
Yeah.
So she, through technological means, has been spying on her brother. He's played by Alex Lawther, best known probably for The End of the Effing World on Channel 4. I think it's on Netflix as well. Well worth seeking out. And he had a pivotal role in the first season of Andor as well. He has this very childlike quality to his physicality. But anyway, he's a medic slash soldier and he is going around bumping into aliens left, right and centre, and she wants to rescue him. That's the emotional arc of the story.
Yeah.
But I assume it's going to get a lot more interesting, even though I think the first few episodes are thrilling. I mean, it's edge of your seat kind of stuff. It's scary. It's spooky. It's violent. It's visceral. It's loaded with, you know, beautiful visuals and horrific visuals at the same time. And I'm very intrigued to see where it's going. But it's also the advent. It's like clearly the end of the summer because it's the advent of horror TV shows. This is kind of what we're getting for the rest of the year.
Is that a thing?
I think so, right? So, I mean, there's not that much on, like, you know, I was trying to think what kind of horror shows, like, obviously this is sci-fi horror. It's a blend of the two. But, like, we're getting, I think in September, we're getting It, Welcome to Derry, which is a kind of prequel series to the It Stephen King stuff.
Yeah.
Then there's, you know, and please excuse me if I pronounce this incorrectly, Talamasca, which is an adaptation of some Anne Rice property, so Interview with a Vampire thing. Then we've got Stranger Things in November, which will be ooky spooky. And then the Duffer Brothers, who obviously made Stranger Things, have just started production with Netflix on a new show called Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen, which
they really are overselling it there, perhaps.
Which is all I can find out about it is that it's set at a wedding, but it's a horror themed show as well.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. I did see the two first episodes of this, and yeah, that was quite promising, I must say. Right. Our next show is called Twisted Metal. New episodes of season two every Friday on Paramount Plus. Here's a clip.
I can't believe we're finally here. The tournament. Do you think I might get the chance to cut someone's head off? I've been sort of wanting to try that.
There is nothing I want more for you, Stu. Oh, hey, look, it's our OG fan club. I told you this would be the social event of the season. We should go say hi before we murder them for sport.
You go ahead.
You know, like the original film of this was like back in the 70s, the original film of Rollerball, and there's another film called Death Race 2000. Okay. There was a kind of a subgenre of these kind of apocalyptic sports in inverted commas, but where people would be killed. Twisted Metal sounds like kind of one of those.
Well, I guess, okay, well, they were not in my frame of reference. My frame of reference is the original Twisted Metal computer game, which was probably a spin-off of those ideas, right? So this was like a 90s PlayStation 1 game in which you drove around in this, like various either races or kind of battles. I can't quite remember. It's a long time since I played it. And this has been adapted as an IP into a now sort of successful and two-season, and they've planned for four seasons show, but they haven't greenlit season three yet. Now, what I will say is this vibrates at a very specific frequency that I think either you like it or you do not. And what I will say is it's going for a B-movie silliness, right? So what we have, we heard in the clip there was Mike Mitchell as Stu and Will Arnett, best known as Job from Arrested Development, voicing the character of Sweet Tooth, but he is physically played by Samoa Joe, Joe Sayanoa, who is a clown who drives around and kills people and habitually sets his head on fire when taking part in the competitions. It is bloody and violent, but it is B-movie in its scripting and its production values and its design. Now, I will say I mainlined all 17 episodes that have been released. That's all of season one and the seven of season two, pretty much over a weekend, because mercifully they are only a half an hour each. So it is a lot easier to do that, and I will give it that credit. But like, you can absolutely bypass season one. It's a complete and utter waste of your time. It's not well written. It's not well acted. The action in that season revolves around Anthony Mackie as John Doe and Stephanie Beatrice, probably best known for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as Quiet, who kind of are basically meet on the road and pair up and decide to drive off into their destiny.
Yeah.
But season one introduces a bunch of characters who are completely recast and changed in season two. So honestly, you can go, you can honestly just go straight to season two, because season two pays off better to the premise of the show. Season one is trying to do all this world building about sort of vaguely how the world, you know, how this post-apocalyptic come down has happened, how what the United States looks like now, the different branches you might find. But it only spends kind of an episode with each one before driving off into the future and shooting someone else. So season two involves the actual Twisted Metal competition. That is to say, it's created by Anthony Carrigan's Calypso. He's this guy who offers the victor in a Hunger Games type, you know, battle to the, but driving around. It's like Mad Max meets Hunger Games meets Death Race 2000 or whatever. Drive around to various challenges, we'll kill a couple of characters each time and then move it on and move it forward. At the end of that, they will, the victor will be granted one wish, but we'll see how that goes.
And what kind of wish?
Well, that would be spoiler territory.
Okay,
to be honest,
gotcha. Yeah.
But to be, but all in, I will say this knows what it is, right? You know, if you think of the most successful computer game adaptations, what I thought was remarkable about them is they're all post-apocalyptic. Right? We've got The Last of Us, post-apocalyptic zombie fungus. We've got Fallout, post-apocalyptic nuclear war shelters, but actually very good. And then we have this, which is, let's say, the third one, right? Now, if you're still, like, a lot of people didn't like The Last of Us Season 2. The jury is out, obviously, on Fallout Season 2, which is coming at some point. This has already gone through its difficult season two, which, if anything, is significantly better than season one. So it is, unlike The Last of Us, at least moving in the right direction, whereas The Last of Us is...
Who knows?
Who knows, right? Yeah. But all in here, you need to understand that you need to go into this with your eyes open of what it is. And that is not very good, right?
Okay.
But if you're willing to seek out something that is just a bit of trash and silly and... like guys going around shooting guns and women shooting guns and driving fast and action that is silly and a few one-liners that are just so naff that they kind of work, then yes, it works. Not very well,
yeah,
but it works.
Okay. Yeah, you actually sold that. Must check that out. Right, who knew that when the early pioneers in reality television were not just making reality television, they were spawning a whole genre of documentaries about those reality TV shows and just how appalling they were. The latest is called Fit for TV, The Reality of the Biggest Loser. You can stream the whole series now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
I've been a fat person for a long time. That's not a real life scenario that I have encountered. I don't frequently step into rooms with unguarded daises full of food. Using temptation as the language here is not accidental. The idea is that fat people cannot be trusted around food. It's designed to make you draw conclusions about the contestant's character.
Right. Okay. So we have been here before.
Yeah.
Various documentaries about shows that were appalling to their contestants. Yeah. Was this The Biggest Loser? Was it awful to its contestants in its own unique way?
It was awful to its contestants in myriad unique ways. I suppose, you know, like, it's not something I would have watched or remember ever really watching. I think a version of it, maybe a UK version of it, was on Sky, but it did run for 16 seasons in the US.
Wow.
So it was a very long running and hugely successful show. And as some of the participants say, you know, the first person we meet is the winner of season 8. His name is Danny Cahill. And I think he says like 10 million people watched his like finale, which would be an absolutely monumental audience for any kind of show now in this day and age, let alone whenever, you know, well, it's, and still very significant back then. But what it does is it follows that trope of look how terrible we were to people in the past, right? Now, it does it in not a particularly novel or interesting way, but there is no denying that the stories that the participants tell you are harrowing and interesting and, you know, make you think about media consumption and production back in the early 2000s. But at the end of it, we get to the third episode and the third of the three, and ultimately we have a few kind of mea culpas from the people who were not very nice to the the contestants / the producers. But there's no kind of reckoning beyond the fact that like wasn't this bad, right? Like, so for instance, there's a huge plot point made in one of the episodes about, I think, the season 15 winner of the show. She lost 70 kilograms in 4 months, and when she appeared in the finale episode, and something to bear in mind about the, you know, The Biggest Loser, if you compare it to something like Operation Transformation, which is not a fair comparison, you know, but like a similar type of show, right? A weight loss show, shall we say, right? Or I'm sure they would say a lifestyle change show, right? A huge, huge difference here is that the winner, the person who lost the most weight on The Biggest Loser, won $250,000. So there was a financial incentive for absolutely taking the diet to the extreme, particularly in the final days of it, in order to guarantee that you could walk home with the $250,000. So they talk about this woman, Rachel Fredrickson is her name, who loses 70 kilograms in 4 months and then comes out onto the show looking very gaunt and completely different to how she had looked 4 months earlier.
Yeah.
But there's no interview with her and there's no sort of check-in in how she's doing now. So you're left as a viewer going like, well, how is it, like, is this woman all right? I'm really kind
of... Maybe she wouldn't talk.
I would say she wouldn't talk. She seems to lead a very private life. But even a comment telling me how she's doing, you know, I would have liked to know she's doing okay, right? All in, it is, it's been number one in Ireland on Netflix since it debuted on Friday. So people are interested in watching this kind of show and certainly reflecting on the recent past. It is an effective enough version of what it is, but it's not a landmark documentary that you must watch in order to understand the early 2000s. But look, the stories it tells are shocking. The characters involved are interesting. The villains are really good. Shout out to Bob Harper, who's their trainer. The other trainer is a woman named Jill, who bullied these people so badly on television that she quite rightly refused to appear in the show, but they do a hatchet job on her.
Who did appear from the production side?
So we get one of the trainers, Bob Harper. We get the two executive producers, David Broom and J.D. Roth, who, to be honest, aren't even mea culpaing their way through it. They're just like, well, we were making TV and selling it around the world and made $1 billion. And then Rob Huizinga, I want to say is his name. He's the medical advisor on the show, who comes across as perhaps the most caring participant of the production team. But put it this way, he didn't leave the production either. You know, like,
yeah, yeah.
But all in, it is a, it's a spectacle. And it's interesting, but at the end of it, it's not very satisfying. As a
yeah,
show.
And so when we're talking about early 2000s, it's from when to when? When was the last series?
So the last series, I think, was in 2020. So,
so it wasn't that long ago then.
No, it wasn't.
Isn't it funny that, you know, like... Like 20 years ago, people used to, they used to occasionally show, or even more, they show, occasionally show these clips of Japanese game shows where people would be physically tortured. And then people go, God, that's appalling. But actually, given the test of time, they're probably, at least they're upfront about what they're doing. Those three shows we're talking about are Alien Earth, new episodes every Wednesday on Disney Plus, Twisted Metal, new episodes of season two every Friday on Paramount Plus, and Fit for TV, The Reality of the Biggest Loser. You can stream the whole series now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.